The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the show, just send your comments to td@kpcg.fm if we have time later on today's program. We'll give you a few comments coming from listeners here in the last few days. Well, yesterday evening, I was able to walk the campus here at Edstone. Beautiful Edstone. It's a beautiful time of year here in the UK. I walked the campus with Brad McDonald as he showed me some of the recent work that's been done to level the soccer field and to plant the seed for the field. Hopefully that'll be up and running in 3 months or so. And we're also hoping to plant some fruit trees along the side of one side of the field. There's quite a bit of work that's being done around the tennis court as well, building up a wall to practice against, and then also some fencing to surround the court and some basketball goals together with that. So hopefully, as we move along as fast as possible, we'll be ready to go for our first youth camp later on this year in the month of August. So I know many of you are excited to hear about any news coming out of Edstone, and there's, of course, a lot of work being done inside the facility here, inside the Edstone Hall. But as always, with God's work, quite a lot being done on the grounds outside as well. And as I said, it's just a beautiful, beautiful time of year. Well, yesterday, President Obama announced 61 new grants of clemency. He's now, if you're keeping track, he's now commuted the sentences of 248 prisoners over the course of his presidency, which is more than the last six U.S. presidents combined. Just to give you a comparison, George W. Bush commuted 11 prison sentences over the course of his 8 years in office, and Barack Obama has granted clemency to 248, 11 versus 248, and he's not finished yet. He still has quite a few months to go. Yesterday, these are some of the remarks he made on the commutations of these prison sentences. Go ahead and play clip three.
I am going to continue to emphasize the importance of pardons and commutations going forward. Today, we commuted 61 additional individuals who are deserving and who I believe will be looking at the people sitting here at this table as models and inspiration for what is possible in their lives. That will mean that at this point I will have commuted 268 sentences, which is more than the previous six presidents combined. But we're not done, and we're going to keep on working on this until I leave.
Not done yet. They're going to keep working on it. It's interesting. He said 268. I think he meant 248. That's what it says on his website. But of that 248 figure, 92 of them were life sentences. So that there gives you a pretty good idea of what kind of criminal we're talking about. Now, we'll look a little bit later at some of the specific individuals that were set for early release yesterday. We'll look at that a little bit later, because, and we'll also try to give you some background here in a second, because if you go back to all the talk about reforming criminal justice and such, the talk many months ago, and we talked about it on this very program, but the talk was that there's quite a few people in prison that just don't deserve to be there. They've just made little tiny mistakes. And then they go off to prison for 5-10 years. And so we need to let them go. Is that true? Well, first, I just want to set the stage. Just compare the numbers. 248 as compared to 11 with the last president. And of course, as the numbers go up and up and up, you have to wonder, well, who in his administration, certainly he doesn't have the time to just pore over these cases, to see who's deserving to be let go. I mean, this is the administration playing judge and jury. 248. How many will it be by the end of this year? They're not done yet. He said so. Here's one more remark that he made, audio clip number two.
Part of it has been to really reinvigorate our commutations and pardons process, because it is my strong belief that by exercising these presidential powers, I have the chance to show people what a second chance can look like, that I can highlight the individuals who are getting these second chances and doing extraordinary things with their lives.
And it sounds good. And of course, who wouldn't want to give someone who's truly repentant a second chance? I mean, God's way of life is about repenting and changing, and God giving us a second opportunity. But is there repentance? That's the thing. Among these 248, how many of them are deeply repentant? Maybe a few are. I don't know. I mean, we have quite a few prisoners that subscribe to our literature and that do come along and even work toward baptism and are obviously deeply sorry and repentant for their crimes. And the whole system, I mean, it is going to be reformed in the wonderful world tomorrow when God and Jesus Christ will read the hearts of men and know if there's been a turnaround and know if there's been a change. But if you don't know, well, this is just a recipe for disaster, and it comes at a time, in case you didn't notice, when our cities are being filled with violence. It's on the increase. There's a lot of division and strife in the world of politics as well. But let me take you back here to what was something that the president was talking about at the middle of last year, July the 16th, 2015. That's when he became the first sitting U.S. president to visit a federal prison. And this happened, as it happens in Oklahoma, El Reno, Oklahoma. He visited this correctional institution there in Oklahoma and gave a question and answer session. And prior to that visit, by the way, he shortened the prison sentences of 46 other prisoners that were convicted for, as he said, nonviolent drug crimes. And then if you remember, we talked about this on TDR, but if you remember, prior to that stop in Oklahoma, he gave this big speech, the president did. He told the NAACP in Philadelphia that while the people in our prisons have made some mistakes, and sometimes big mistakes, they're also Americans. So, I mean, they've got to be considered for a second chance. They've got to be considered for an opportunity to leave. And so far, 248 have, or will very soon. 92 of them that were on life sentences. So let me take you back to what he said at that NAACP conference. This is clip 6.
By just about every measure, the life chances for black and Hispanic youth still lag far behind those of their white peers. Our kids, America's children, so often are isolated, without hope, less likely to graduate from high school, less likely to earn a college degree, less likely to be employed, less likely to have health insurance, less likely to own a home. And part of this is a legacy of hundreds of years of slavery and segregation and structural inequalities that compounded over generations. It did not happen by accident. Partly it's a result of continuing, is sometimes more subtle, bigotry. Whether and who gets called back for a job interview, or who gets suspended from school, or what neighborhood you're able to rent an apartment in, which, by the way, is why our recent initiative to strengthen the awareness and effectiveness of fair housing laws is so important. So we can't be satisfied, are not satisfied, until the opportunity gap is closed for everybody in America. Everybody. But today I want to focus on one aspect of American life that remains particularly skewed by race and by wealth, a source of inequity that has ripple effects on families and on communities and ultimately on our nation. And that is our criminal justice system.
So he stated there that he was going to be making some serious reforms in the criminal justice system. And here again, I know as he brings out there, he wants to really make race a big part of this, but just leave aside race for a moment and we'll go through the rap sheet of some of these individuals that have been let go. What have they done? Why are they in prison? And what will they do? We can't know that for sure. But what will they do if they revert back to their old ways that got them put in prison in the first place? When in Oklahoma, here again, he spoke at the NAACP, and then in Oklahoma, he said, our criminal justice system isn't as smart as it should be. It's not keeping us safe as we should be. And he said, it's not as fair as it should be. In other words, there's too many blacks in prison, and so we've got to let more of them out. That's the thinking. That's the approach. And added to the race element, there's also the fact that, well, as he sees it, drug problems are more of a health problem than they are a criminal problem. Let me just play for you quickly what he said. This is coming back to what he said just the other day, clip number one.
What we have to recognize is in this global economy of ours that the most important thing we can do is to reduce demand for drugs. And the only way that we reduce demand is if we're providing treatment and thinking about this as a public health problem and not just a criminal problem.
And so it's a health problem, and of course, who wouldn't want to go at reducing the demand, getting at the cause? But of course, the cause, as he sees it, is that it's a sickness. It's a health problem, and so the cure is the treatment. Get them in a treatment facility. Provide them with government handouts. Get them on the dole. Give them a fresh start. And everything will turn out A-okay. Well, again, going back to 8-9 months ago, after the NAACP, then he went and visited this facility in Oklahoma. And here's what he said at that El Reno facility in Oklahoma. This is clip five.
You know, visiting with these six individuals, I've said this before, when they describe their youth and their childhood, These are young people who made mistakes that aren't that different than the mistakes I made and the mistakes that a lot of you guys made. The difference is they did not have the kinds of support structures, the second chances, the resources that would allow them to survive those mistakes. And I think we have a tendency sometimes to almost take for granted or think it's normal that so many young people end up in our criminal justice system. It's not normal. It's not what happens in other countries. What is normal is teenagers doing stupid things. What is normal is young people making mistakes. And we've got to be able to distinguish between dangerous individuals who need to be incapacitated and incarcerated versus young people who are in an environment in which they are adapting, but if given different opportunities, a different vision of life,
could be thriving the way we are.
So lots to unpack there. Firstly, that these are the ones he's talking about are individuals that have made mistakes that he made, President Obama made, and that you guys in the media have made. I mean, this is just teenagers being teenagers, doing stupid things. And we've got to be able to distinguish between the dangerous ones who need to be incarcerated and the ones that need to be let out and given another chance. So you go through some of the examples of those let go yesterday, or at least were granted clemency yesterday. I think they're due to be let go here in the next couple of months. 61 more. Here's just a sampling. Bernard Beard, his offense, conspiracy to distribute cocaine, heroin, felon in possession of a firearm and ammunition. He's from California. Here's another one from Greensboro, North Carolina. Conspiracy to distribute cocaine, so he's a drug trafficker, or was. Carry a firearm during and in relation to the drug trafficking crime. Here's another one, another prisoner from New York, Brooklyn, New York. Possessed with intent to distribute crack, possessed firearms during trafficking crime. And then this one from Alabama. Possession with intent to distribute crack cocaine, using/carrying a firearm in furtherance of a drug trafficking offense. He was put in jail in 2007. Now he's out, along with all these others. Knoxville, Tennessee. Possession with intent to distribute cocaine, felon in possession of a firearm. And on it goes. I mean, most of these cases, these are not individuals that were 16 and bought an ounce of marijuana illegally and then ended up in jail for 15 years. These are drug traffickers, in some cases, violent criminals. These are repeat offenders in many cases. He says he wants to stop the flow of drug trafficking, even as he lets out many of these convicted felons who were convicted of drug trafficking. St. Louis, Illinois, possession of a firearm, maintaining a crack house, felon in possession of a firearm, trafficking crime. But let's give him a second chance. Well, I mean, if he's repentant, if he's made real changes, how many of these 248, though, have made a total change in the direction of their lives? How can we even know? If it's a similar pattern, doesn't it? We've talked about these other stories over the last year. Back in June last year, the Washington Times reporting that there had been 121 murders attributed to illegals released by the Obama administration. Those illegals presumably needed a second chance. Sadly, the 121 victims, murder victims, they don't get a second chance. It says more than 100 immigrants whom the Obama administration released back to the community went on to be charged with subsequent killings, according to government data released Monday, that raises more questions about whether immigration authorities are doing enough to detail illegal immigrants awaiting deportation. So I'm sure there are stories of great inspiration of individuals that turned it around with that second chance, but how much longer will it be before the study comes out saying that of the 248 released, or of the 3 or 4 or 500 released, 10, 15, 20 went on to do such and such. This piece from back in June, it says, all told, 121 immigrants who were held but eventually released by ICE went on to commit homicide-related crimes, from 2010 to 2014. So how many more of these kinds of crimes have to happen before someone, anyone in the administration, in government, wakes to realize that this has been a failure? This so-called criminal justice reform has been a failure. Now, look, it's no secret that the United States has a lot more prisoners than any other nation in the world, and the president has pointed this out on several occasions. But why is that? Why is there such a huge demand for drugs? Why are there so many people willing to risk 10, 15, 20 years in prison to traffic drugs? Let's talk about root causes. Let's talk about the real cause. And it always gets back to family, doesn't it? It always gets back to family breakdown. It's not a treatment facility or lack thereof. It's the breakdown in the family. It's the transgression of God's laws. Sin is the cause. When the family's upside down, the whole society turns upside down, and this is what we're left with. You're seeing it play out. Talking about those illegals that were let go over the course of that 2010 to 2014 period, you might remember Jeremiah Jacques wrote at the Trumpet about the worst prison break in American history. Is that what this is? Is that really what was announced yesterday, the worst prison break in American history? Or maybe the second worst, when you compare it to what stats Mr. Jacques told us about in June of last year, I think it was. He said, during the 6 years Mr. Obama's been in power, the Department of Homeland Security has knowingly released some 195,000 criminally convicted illegal immigrants onto America's streets. And so what happens when you release tens of thousands of illegal immigrants onto America's streets, many of them violent criminals? And what happens when you release hundreds of drug traffickers back onto the streets of the United States? Well, we're about to find out. We're about to find out. And as I say, it comes at a particularly explosive time when city leaders all across the United States are trying to explain the skyrocketing crime numbers, not just in Ferguson, not just in Baltimore, but in all of America's big cities. What is happening to our cities? And how is this going to make it better? It's something to think about. There's a verse in Ezekiel chapter 7 and verse 23. It says, "Make a chain, for the land is full of bloody crimes, and the city is full of violence." The land is just full of bloody crimes. The cities are full of violence. You go back to Genesis 6. Let me just point this out before we conclude this segment. Genesis chapter 6, those days before the flood, when all in the world that was had become corrupt. God saw, this is verse 5, God saw the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and that every imagination of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. That's the way it was right before the flood. It says, "And it repented the Eternal that he had made man on the earth, and it grieved his heart." And then down in verse 12, this is Genesis 6, it says in verse 12, "And God looked upon the earth, and behold, it was corrupt, for all flesh had corrupted his way upon the earth." So much corruption. The earth, it says in verse 11, was just filled with violence. And did you know Jesus said it's going to be just like that? Just like the days of Noah. in the days leading up to his return to this earth. So just before the second coming of Jesus Christ, it will be, as Ezekiel prophesied it to be, filled with violence, our cities, our nations. And as I say, when you see steps like taken like this, you know that it's only going to get worse. Let me just play one last clip to just again highlight the thinking. These are things that, again, sound good to the liberal mind, but it's not going to work out in the end. Let's see, what's the last clip we haven't played? Clip four, I think. Go ahead.
And I've heard that repeatedly from employers that if they are willing to take a chance on somebody, they will be rewarded by somebody who is grateful and will go above and beyond the call of duty. But unfortunately, we have a lot of barriers in a lot of companies. This is part of the reason why at the federal level we have instituted a banning of the box, because so often that prevents somebody from even meeting a fellow, because all they see is there's a record there and don't have a chance to hear somebody's story and get a measure of the man or the woman and their ability to do the job.
And again, it all sounds good and hopeful. Giving someone a second chance, ban the box so they don't have to identify the fact that they've been in prison. And that's great, supposing the applicant has sincerely turned his life around. But what if he hasn't? And what if he brings danger to that workplace? What if he's a threat to that workplace? Really, all of this just highlights how the problems that we have, they're not solvable without God. And whether you try to put forward liberal policies or conservative policies, the fact remains that our cities are filled with violence. Our cities are filled with it. And if we're watching, if our eyes are opened, well, we should be crying out all the more for God's kingdom to come. It's coming soon. You can see it from just looking at some of these alarming figures, just the sheer number of criminals and the number of criminals being set free back onto the streets of the United States. You're listening to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show on KPCG 101.3 on the FM dial in Edmond, our headquarters campus, Edmond, Oklahoma. This broadcast comes to you from Edstone in the beautiful Midlands region of the UK. It's made available via the live stream all over the world. If you have internet access, you can get that stream at thetrumpet.com or at kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
A turning point in recent history has gone almost entirely overlooked. Since that time, an unseen cause has brought about national and world troubles in unprecedented fashion. Crises are intensifying as never before. In our generation, we are seeing radical changes to culture, family, education, religion, science, finance, politics, international relations. Everything has been affected. You cannot understand events without recognizing this unseen cause. The United States has been shaken in astonishing fashion. Have you wondered why the world's number one superpower is declining so rapidly? Are you concerned about where the current administration is leading this country? The Bible provides penetrating insight into the invisible cause of society's decline. America is prophesied to fall before it rises again. The Bible also gives extraordinary insight into how that fall will come about. This insight puts the seriousness and urgency of current events in their true perspective. Understand what's in store for America and why. Visit thetrumpet.com and click on the literature tab to request this free, enlightening booklet, America Under Attack.
The developed nations have made awesome progress. They have produced a highly mechanized world, providing every luxury, modern convenience, and means of pleasure. Yet they are cursed with crime, violence, injustice, sickness and disease, broken homes and families. At the same time, more than one half the world is living in illiteracy, abject poverty, filth and squalor. Violence and destruction are rapidly multiplying. Many ask, why, if God exists, does he allow so much violence and human suffering? To understand the reason behind this astonishing paradox, request a complimentary copy of Mystery of the Ages. We were born into this 20th century world as it is. We take it for granted, but we can't explain it. It's like viewing a movie at a point already near the end. We see what is occurring at that point, but not having seen it from the beginning and not knowing how events developed to the point of viewing, we simply cannot understand what we are seeing. Mystery of the Ages transports you back to the beginning of the movie, to the foundation of this present evil world. To learn more, please visit thetrumpet.com. From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is the Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Flurry.
Well, many in America probably wouldn't know it, given the obsession with all things Trump. But Europe is at the edge of the abyss, as Victor Davis Hanson said in his latest column. He says here, after suffering serial terrorist attacks from foreign nationals and immigrants, a normal nation state would be expected to make extraordinary efforts to close its borders and redefine its foreign policy in order to protect its national interests. But a France or a Belgium is not quite a sovereign nation anymore, he says, and thus does not have a complete control over its national destiny or foreign relations. So here is one who's talking about Europe as dying as part of the European Union. France and Belgium, Hanson writes, have for all practical purposes placed their own security in the hands of an obdurate Angela Merkel's Germany, which is bent on allowing without audit millions of disenchanted young Middle Eastern males. Well, it talks about Germany and Mrs. Merkel, of course, having wide open arms to this steady stream of refugees. Hanson says no European country can take the security measures necessary for its own national needs without either violating or ignoring EU mandates. That the latest terrorist murder struck near the very heart of the EU in Brussels is emblematic of the Union's dilemma. We touched on this to some extent last week. Right at the heart of the EU, right at the capital. And it shows. It shows just how severe this crisis is. Europe's immigration policy is a disaster, and for reasons that transcend the idiocy of allowing the free influx of young male Muslims from a pre-modern, war-torn Middle East into a post-modern pacifist and post-Christian Europe. This is really talking about a clash of civilizations. And Hanson says here, Europe's perfect storm is upon us. It's upon us. A clash is coming. He says he didn't write that. I just said that. He says a shrinking statist and agnostic society that does not believe in transcendence, either familial or religious, is now in a war with near neighbors of a very different sort. In the Middle East, the fundamentalists are growing in numbers, and they most certainly do believe that their own lives are nothing in comparison to the phoenix-like resurrection of their caliphate and the sensual pleasures in the hereafter that will reward their martial sacrifices in the here and now. It says, of all the many reasons why immigrants to Europe so often dislike their generous hosts, the simplest may be because they so easily can. They can just so easily dislike them. They can come in, take advantage of all of the freedoms, all of the liberties, and then use it against their host. And so when will Europe crack down? When will a strong man show up? When will a leader show up that says, that's it, we're not going to tolerate this anymore. We're not going to tolerate this violence. We're not going to tolerate you ripping apart our capital cities. We're not going to let you terrorize our people. That man's coming, the Daniel 8 man. Richard Palmer gave me this article. It's from one of the leading business dailies in Germany, Handelsblatt. It's the English language edition. They had a fairly lengthy interview with Carl Theodor zu Gutenberg in English, which makes it helpful. We have translators at our headquarters office, so we can get by if it's in German, but this was easier to examine earlier today. But there were a few things that stood out to Richard, and he passed it along to me. I'll just read a few excerpts from the interview. Handelsblatt asks, earlier we talked about Germany taking on more responsibility. Do you see us as a problem solver in this region? We've talked about Germany taking a more central role, taking on more responsibility. How do you see it? I mean, this is at a time when Germany's already the dominant power in Europe. As Hansen brought out, I mean, France and Belgium are having to do what they do because, well, Angela Merkel's Germany's in charge. Gutenberg says this, of course we have to deal with the mess of the refugee crisis, but at the same time, I think the region is looking more and more at us right now. Ironically, because of the refugee crisis and the fact that we brought them all in, we have a huge credibility in Shiite circles. Germany could therefore do more here in that regard. The magazine or the publication then asks him about how many in the U.S. are urging Germany to take on more responsibility, urging Germany to engage more with other nations, even if it means deploying troops. And here again, Gutenberg answers, we deliver a lot. We were just too shy and too reluctant to tell our story at home and abroad. Out of whatever understanding of history we may have had at the time, out of whatever understanding of our old interconnections to our presence at that very moment, he says, I think where we failed is to make this clear. People here are surprised when I tell them we were the third biggest troop supplier in Afghanistan for many years. He's talking about the people in America. People here are surprised when I tell them we were the third biggest troop supplier in Afghanistan. It says we have done a lot in the last couple of years to gain credibility in foreign affairs. Still, would I like to see more? Yes, he says. Would I like to see more coherence in our movements? Yes. And the magazine asks him then, well, how so? Be more precise. Get more specific. He says, take the example of Afghanistan. We've been in Congo, he also points out. Yes, we've played a huge role in Bosnia-Herzegovina, but we ducked down when it came to Libya in a very strange way. There may have been good reasons not to take part, but we communicated it in a lousy, lousy way. So when I say we need to have more coherence, or we need more coherence, it's because at the end of the day, that is impacting our stability at home as well. So you get the gist of the interview, the back and forth, but he's calling on Germany to take on more responsibility in Europe and beyond. Just as an aside here, he makes no bones about the fact that he's not much of a Donald Trump fan. He calls him a blonde lunatic. So he doesn't like Trump. He's not crazy about Cruz. He'd rather prefer John Kasich as the Republican candidate he likes the most. But Richard just made a few concluding comments on this piece. As I say, this is from Handelsblatt, the English language edition of Germany's leading business daily. And it's a thorough interview with Carl Theodor zu Gutenberg. And Richard comments on, particularly where he talks about the rise of Trump there in the United States and all of these European populist parties, and how that it will lead us to question, this is quoting Gutenberg, lead us to question whether our beloved and so important and still growing democratic system is as stable as we would like it to be, or whether we need to look at it from a new creative point of view. That's very interesting. Maybe because of the rise of these populist groups, these populist leaders, maybe we need to look at our democratic system from a new and more creative point of view. Well, we'll have to stay tuned to see if he provides more insight into what it is exactly he thinks these creative ideas are for perhaps a new political system. We do know, don't we, that dramatic changes are coming for Europe. We know that with the referendum coming up in June for the UK, that could jolt the entire continent. That, together with all these other mounting crises. And then there's the unknowns, the things that could be happening in the next few months, the next few weeks, for all we know, just given what's been happening over the last year, year and a half. When we come back, we'll just conclude the program with a few of the emails that have come in recent days. You're listening to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show on KPCG 101.3 on the FM dial in Edmond. The live stream is available at thetrumpet.com. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
For an easy-to-read, information-rich news brief, join the growing readership of the Trumpet Weekly. Now you can enjoy all the top news stories from the previous week, condensed into a report combining the commentary, analysis, and reporting you've come to expect from thetrumpet.com, sent directly to your email. Subscribing is completely free. Simply visit the Trumpet Weekly section of thetrumpet.com to subscribe by email today.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
A few emails from you listeners before we conclude today's program. This one, a general response to the programs. I live for these programs every day, she says. It's like having a one-on-one conversation with one of God's ministers. Each one of them brings balance, correction, love, and priceless knowledge from God the Father. As always, another great show. We appreciate that very much. This one here in response to yesterday's program, where we talked there at the end, if you recall, about work ethic. We built the show around, or at least the second segment, around Robert Morley's piece from yesterday about those Canadian handouts, more social programs, more programs that rather encourage laziness. And we concluded the program yesterday with quite a few verses in the Bible about work and work ethic. As I said yesterday, there's hundreds of them in the Proverbs throughout the Bible about being a good provider, about fulfilling your responsibility. This here, as I say, it comes from a young man in Florida. He said it was a great episode with inspiring hope in seeking employment for those that are unemployed. When I first scheduled a ministerial visit with the PCG, I was unemployed. The minister greatly encouraged me with the same admonition that you gave the viewers on this program, that we should take the time looking each day for a job and make looking for a job the job. It brought me back to the beginning of my calling into God's church. Shortly after that, I found a place of employment, and now I currently have two jobs. He says, thank God for the manifold blessings. So there's an individual working to put the principles we discussed yesterday into practice, and now he's working hard with two jobs. This next one, a bit of encouragement for me personally. It's a blessing to hear you speak, even though your voice is not as clear as usual. So he has put up with the congestion of the last couple of days. It was nice, by the way, as I said at the top of the show, just to get outside last evening on a beautiful evening here in the West Midlands, and to walk the campus and to see so many of the students out, and to see young Isaac McDonald taking a whack at a golf ball, trying to hit it across the property. A beautiful evening. It's a gorgeous area where God's placed his name and his regional office here in the UK. In any event, the voice is slowly but surely getting stronger, as hopefully you can tell today. But he appreciated hearing it even when it wasn't quite as clear. Thanks so much, he says. Keep up the good work. And then this last one here, coming from a lady that has responded quite a few times, or sent in comments quite a few times. Thank you for the wonderful program last week on laying siege to that one big problem. She says, I must admit that before listening to the program, I had to drop to my knees and just ask God to help me receive it the right way. I've been knocked down so many times in this battle against myself and Satan that I have a bad attitude toward fighting. I don't love God enough. Still, there seems to be progress, as I've indicated a couple of times in response to programs before. I just want for you to know that your delivery of God's message was so helpful and effective. This is just what I've been asking for. I'm encouraged at the thought of fighting, in a way. I feel so thoroughly encouraged at the thought of what could be possible, even without any clear idea of exactly what that might be. In fact, because of all my particular sins and weaknesses, I'm trying to reserve myself a little bit from deciding on the one thing to work on and to stop to really ask God before I dive in headlong. Perhaps I'm finally learning, unless the Lord shall build the house, the weary builders toil in vain. She says, this program really did wonders in bringing another surge in hope. So thank you, sincerely. Well, I appreciate those comments that continue coming in. That last one, as I say, came in response to the program we did last week about laying siege to that one problem. If you'd like to send in additional comments along with some of these that we just read to you, don't forget to do that to send those to td@kpcg.fm. You're listening to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show on KPCG 101.3 on the FM dial in Edmond, Oklahoma. Thank you for joining us today, and we'll see you again tomorrow.